just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know
a bill banning something for 7 years was approved 402-0 by the House on Tuesday. Less than 2 days before all heck would have broken loose. The Senate passed also a 7-year prohibition on this, a ban. What do you suppose the House and the Senate could agree on almost unanimously, since they don't agree on just about everything? Tina in Renton.
I guess gay marriage.
You're guessing gay marriage. Gay marriage, no, hot button issue.
Party Frank,
people don't agree. Yeah. In fact, 1 in 10 really dig it.
You think even the gay congressman would say no to that gay marriage?
You think Barney Franks would go, that's it, I'm done being gay.
Yeah. Come on.
Nice try, Tina.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks for jumping on the grenade.
Really
sweet of you.
The gay-nade. Maria, hello.
Hi.
What do you think the House and Senate could agree on? The House would actually pass a ban for 7 years unanimously.
How about no more illegal aliens?
No more illegal aliens. And the senator from New Mexico? senator from
California,
Arizona,
Texas.
But in 7 years, let them all in?
Yeah, no more.
Is it illegal aliens? No. Oh, we love our illegal aliens privately.
Always.
When they're handling the children and cleaning up. No, it's not that. House passed this unanimously, 402-0. Ken, what did they ban for an additional 7 years?
Waterboarding.
Show me waterboarding. No.
They only do that for 7 years.
Keep in a cell to 2014. That's all we ask.
That waterboarding ban expires Tuesday. We better talk.
Countdown.
There has been some debate on waterboarding, and some are saying, I still just don't think that's torture. There's some debate as to whether it is.
Ken, good guess, but not correct.
All right, thanks.
What do you think they banned for 7 years? Richard in Bellevue.
Yes, it's the movie Song of the South.
The Zippity Doodah Act of 2007? Dude.
Absolutely.
I think, dude, all the favor say aye. All the pose, say no. Hey, no.
Song of the South has not been released in America, but it's not due to Congress. It's due to Disney worrying about the flack they might get. Great movie, by the way, I think. You know, I'd like to see
nice
it.
Nice try, Richard. Back. Entertaining. Thank you. What do you think they all agreed on? Corey in Seattle.
I think it's trans fat.
Did Congress agree and ban unanimously, an item that's actually naturally contained in some meats? You know the trans fat is some of it's natural.
Oh, okay.
So they would have had to basically...
all in favor of getting rid of every cow in America?
Did they ban making trans fat? Good question. No. No, although most companies are voluntarily removing trans fat from just about everything.
Now, you say, are you sure about this naturally? Because I went to a restaurant and said, no trans fats used, and they got lots of cow on the menu. I mean, lots of hamburgers and stuff.
Eric, isn't Mike knows the answer to this. We've talked about it before.
It comes up just about every time. Yeah, there are naturally occurring trans fats.
Damn, Mike.
But in meat, because how can you serve hamburgers?
Working with a bunch of amnesiacs in here. Well, I know we've talked about this.
I don't want to start the whole debate, but how can you say no trans fats and have hamburgers?
It means they don't add trans fats. No man-made manufactured trans fats, correct?
Exactly. They cook without them.
By the way, do you know what trans fat is?
No.
It's margarine.
Trans fat?
Is margarine.
That's what they called the car Burt Reynolds drove in after Smokey the Bandit's third movie. That was the trans fat.
It's Trans Am.
Yeah. The third movie, it wasn't. By the way, the Senate was also unanimous. We had speculated the House passed it 402-0. The Senate was 100-0.
They all agreed to ban this thing. Russell, what do you think it is?
I think it's all toys made and imported from China.
All toys in China. That's it. We're declaring war on Chinese toys.
No toys for kids.
Yeah.
It's not that. By the way... would be blaming China for our greedy corporations who don't oversee the manufacture once they ship our jobs overseas, by the way. You know, I think the Chinese lead paint toys are our fault. You agree?
Yes.
Yeah.
No. No way. There's only a few rogue factories in China that are breaking the rules.
Most when you're working for companies China. Like Hasbro,
Mattel,
Fisher Price,
if Hasbro is going to offload these jobs to sweatshops and whatever they call them, peppermint houses, whatever they call them,
gingerbread factories,
gingerbread witches, if they're going to do that, don't you think it's on us if we're going to be a, what do they call them, multinational company, right? To go over there and oversee the quality of things you bring into the United States.
Yeah,
it's our responsibility.
I can't argue that. But you can't say every factory over there is using lead paint and using sweatshop labor and that kind of thing.
What do you think they all agreed to ban for an additional 7 years? Christina.
Hi, did they...
Ooh.
Cell phone towers, no.
Oh, want to get away? Christina, hello? All right, I'll give you her answer. It was a good one. The draft. But we don't have a draft.
We don't.
How long do we not have a draft for?
Until they decide to start drafting. We have a selective service system that you register, and should a draft ever be of paramount need, I think they can enact one pretty darn fast.
Sharon in Silverdale, your guess.
The internet tax.
Sharon.
Yes.
That's not the guess you gave Mike Jones.
Oh, income tax. Yeah.
Oops.
Oops, geez. So
this is it's all right, Sharon. Hang on.
She's faking it for us, Bob. Oh, Bob. Oh, Bob. Yes, Bob. Right there. That's
Paul and Everett has the correct answer. Paul, the correct answer is?
They voted to continue the ban on taxing the Internet.
Taxing the Internet. Now, a lot of people don't know what that means, and I am sort of one of them. Do you know exactly what that means?
No, I do not. I just saw the headline.
Okay. We're going to find out for you. Hang on, Paul.
Thank you.
What do we do about the people who... she hung up.
Jazit.
Okay. What do we... We need a name for those people. People that call Mike with...
Poachers.
Because they know that the right answer is probably already sitting there.
Right.
We're enjoying the wrong answers.
Mm-hmm. Little bait and switchers. Yeah.
Poachers. Good.
Poachers.
Prize poacher. We give them something. Ooh.
We need little pigs, little stuffed pig to mail them or something.
No,
prize poacher.
No.
Oh, yeah, I was a prize poacher.
Yeah, those would be treasured.
Yeah. All right, so that's the correct answer. Congratulations, Paul. I'm confused about this bill because it extends the moratorium on Internet access taxes.
Right.
That's not collecting state tax. It's and they say it's that there's a ban on taxing email. And there's a ban on taxing, let's see, what else?
The Internet access.
It's
a logon tax.
But if you subscribe to Internet service, say from Comcast or MSN, if you're dialing up or whatever you're doing, don't you pay state tax on that? Don't you pay?
They were looking to add an additional federal tax on your Internet service provider right on top of your bill.
I think, if all of Congress agrees on something, I think they got it wrong. I think it is time for a tax on email.
Seriously?
What?
If it cost a teensy, tiny fraction of a cent to send email, and it showed up on your Internet bill as a nickel in a year, what would it do to spammers?
It would increase their cost of doing business, but it's not going to be that much if it's only...
It should be just the right amount on email to make spamming expensive. Because right now, spammers... by the way, do you know how the mass mailing business works in terms of mailing to your mailbox? You've gotten spam for decades. You've gotten flyers, coupons, mass marketing through mail. Mm-hmm. You never got thousands of them. Like, you never went out to your mailbox and couldn't find the real letter from Grandma because of all the ads for sexual dysfunction drugs, right? And then this never happened in your mailbox. Do you know why?
You have to put a stamp on that.
It costs them money to send it to you. I think Congress got this absolutely wrong. And once again, screwed us, the public. because what you could do is you could pass a tax that taxed marketers on email, which would raise the bar for marketers. You could also pass a tax loophole, they do it all the time, that would allow people to register with each other to receive email and have that be completely tax-free.
Ugh, what a pain, though. Email's so easy and free. It's the one last easy free thing we have in this society.
It's getting, not getting easy. It's getting harder and harder and harder. You got to weed through all the garbage. If it was, wouldn't it be easier if you didn't have to weed through
I
the garbage?
Honestly, like, I use Gmail and I hardly get any spam.
Let me explain to you why that's not correct.
I love when you start a sentence like
that. That's my favorite part of the
show.
Let me
explain to you why I'm correct.
You say email is easy and free, but there's one thing that costs money on the internet that you don't actually pay directly for, but indirectly you pay for it. And that's the bandwidth that is used to send you the things you want to get. When you click on a page, when you watch a video, bandwidth is being used. By one estimate, I'll misquote it, by one estimate, a gazillion percent of that bandwidth is used for junk email that nobody wants. If a tax was passed that made that form of email unprofitable, the savings of increased bandwidth at no cost would be a boon to you and the internet companies, and all of a sudden legitimate transactions would have a chance to get through easier. And the cost of that would be very small. It would go to the government. It would go to the bottom line. But actually, this may be the one sensible tax. Does anybody agree with me?
I kind of see your point.
I'm trying, but you lost me at bandwidth.
Donovan, you're up first.
Well, hello, Bob, Spike, Joe, and gang.
Hi.
Hey, I can't agree with you more. There are a number of proposals that have been floated over the years for what is called email postage. And the most compelling one, I think, is one where you pay the postage up front and then the receiver has the option of clicking on the postage stamp, if you will, and saying, this person doesn't have to pay for this email. So it gives the receiver the option of whether the person is going to have to pay postage or not.
Oh, that sounds dangerous.
Well, and that has been argued a lot, Donovan. My idea is maybe even a little more streamlined, but it does create a new government bureaucracy, and you know how I hate those.
Yeah.
I would literally create a commercial email post office in the government and charge a very small amount, but I would allow commercial email to exist and pay postage, and all personal email would go around that.
Well, I guess the problem is trying to define personal email and all that, and so by allowing each receiver...
Well, you would have to then register with the government as a person.
Oh, yeah.
For the government post office.
The bureaucracy you're avoiding there, Bob.
And the food I'm eating is Soylent Green, I know,
right.
But we'll talk
email.
More. We have our guest on, but a couple of more quick calls. Tim, good idea or not?
Well, you got some problems with it. I used to own an ISP. About 80% of our bandwidth was dedicated solely for email traffic. Of that, about 70% of that was crap, spam. Spammers are adept, and they use open relays.
Yeah, but if you had to register in order to send or receive email, it's doable.
Well, it's... you would think it would be, but technically it runs into big, big problems.
Thank you, sir. We'll get into that later. Dave, you have the last word.
Okay, one of the reasons this isn't going to work is spammers don't really send their own email.
Right? They hijack computers, but they wouldn't be able to hijack your computer unless you gave them permission to under this. And besides, that hijacking of the computer thing, we're getting past that as security gets better, are we not?
No, actually, I just got spam not even an hour ago from a hijacked computer.
No, I'm not saying it's gone, but we will, technology will evolve. That's a temporary problem.
Not as temporary as you'd like to believe.
You think 100 years from now people's computers will be hijacked to send spam?
Maybe not 100 years from now, but still within the next 25 or 30 years.
You do?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Dave, we're out of time. We'll talk more. Send me emails. We'll bring this up another day. Are there any television shows that you gathered the entire family around the TV to watch? Unfortunately, I've looked at this list.
Yeah.
I don't like any of them.
We watch Extreme Makeover, Home Edition, as a family.
Not on... Oh, yes, it is. I'm sorry. That's okay. At the top of the list.
Is it? Okay, good. That's kind of the only one I can think of at all.
So that's dream of suddenly having someone descend on your house and shower you with material gain.
Oh, no. Not at all. It's Shut Up, You Could Have It Worse. You know, that's the Shut Up, You Could Have It Worse hour at my house.
The problem with that show, and I told Joe once, it's a beautiful show. He's right. They leave your house. Amazing. They give you TV sets and everything. But then they leave. And they leave the house with everything there in a poor neighborhood. And the cameras are gone. Everything is gone. You have a plasma TV. You have everything equipped. And then they're gone. And you know what's going to happen.
They should post the security guards.
House jacked. The new on ABC. House jacked. Right after Extreme Makeover.
You see the neighbors waiting outside. Just, okay, I'm going to take everything when you guys are gone.
And come with an electric fence.
No.
Of course, we've talked to them about that. They give a lot of concern to where the neighborhood is and the ability of the homeowners afterwards to handle the house. But isn't that a show? What is the main message of that show? Greed.
No, it's not.
Consumerism. I want it better than I have it.
No, it's people really down on their luck in some way.
They get helped.
It's deserving people that get helped, like the family in Kirkland that they helped earlier this year. Their house was, they said, in the next earthquake, that house could collapse.
So are you saying that family is now better off than the families they live near who are in the same straits?
Well, no, because it's not about...
By the way, most of the time when people receive a windfall, like a lottery ticket or something like that, you know what happens. They rip right through it.
Yeah, but the show's not just... They don't qualify by how bad you have it. They qualify by what are you doing with your life? And these are people that are, you know, taking in orphans that are...
These are good people.
These are good people.
Should good so the message is good people should have money.
They're not giving away good money.
The message is
good things happen to good people.
Are you following me, Eric? Because these guys don't have a clue.
Well, we get it, Spin Doctor.
My sister is a senior producer on that show, so I have
some
insight.
You love the show. Look at you.
Well, I will say this. They have a huge vetting process. They get hundreds and hundreds, actually thousands of applications, and they have entire staffs that look through each one, making sure that it will hold up to the
standard. What if they just, instead of one house, one lucky family, so many losers, what if they went to the neighborhood and got them all energy-efficient windows? I'm just saying.
You're onto something here. Yeah.
Well, but the reason why they do that is that human beings like to respond to one person or one family. If you do a whole neighborhood or a whole city, it doesn't connect.
You won't watch that show. They go to every single house and put a window set. What's
Extreme
the point?
Window makeover.
Just the garage door opener. You're tired of opening that garage. You're going to give one to
open
everybody.
That garage!
I'm just saying. It appeals to... So it does appeal to the doing good for somebody nature in all of us.
It's a Cinderella and
it appeals to blatant consumerism as well.
There is one drawback that the local families experienced is you got to close your house down because everybody wants to see what they've done and they can't show them. It hasn't aired, so you're shut off from your friends, from everybody for a while.
Extreme Makeover Home Edition is the first show on the list. The list of green light shows from the PTC, the Parents Television Council, includes Sunday Night Football.
That's one Emily and I watch together, but I kind of could see an argument for not... I definitely distract her at times. I mean, when a guy gets laid out with a snapped leg or something, I don't really want her to see that side of the sport.
A little brutal.
Yeah, so I usually will switch channels or something.
Cheerleaders close up. That's something else. I don't want to have a 10-year-old kid just, checking some...
Look at those, Timmy. See how they jiggle when she jumps? Your mom used to look like just like that.
I don't mind that so much.
You don't mind her looking at the
comparing herself.
Cheerleader female form as the desired objective for all women.
Just the healthy, hey, you can, jump on the sidelines and enjoy football. I mean,
you keep on that treadmill, honey, you can get shorts just that short, right, like that. That's what you got to shoot for, right?
All right. Now, I have a different reason for not thinking that Sunday Night Football is a family affair.
What?
Quite simply, Sunday Night Football appeals primarily to which gender?
The man.
Man.
Yeah.
And when a man is spending time with his daughter watching Sunday Night Football, who's really getting the better end of the deal?
Joe?
Quality time. Well, both of you are getting a good end.
If breathing together is quality time, then I agree with you.
Not now, Daddy. Not now, honey. It's third
and
down, honey.
And
third
also,
down.
What about the? I mean, the fact that it is that Sunday night the football itself as a sport is merely war played out on a field between two teams who want to kill each other, figuratively.
Well, there's winners and losers, like in most wars.
It's territorial acquisition through brute force. George Carlin had a great bit on it.
Yeah.
It is war.
Is this something your daughter should actually see at her age? And yeah. Does it really enrich her life in any way? Or does it just give you a babysitting excuse to do something that's purely selfish for you? I'm just asking.
Well, she's learned so much geography and spelling thanks to football.
Really?
Oh yeah, she can tell. She knows every city.
She thinks that Carolina is the state animal is the
right,
panther.
The panther, that's right, honey. Did see that? Everybody in Kansas City is a chief. Isn't that great? How they do that?
She can spell panther and chief too. That's pretty good.
She's probably looking out the backyard for when she's looking for the Easter bunny to hide eggs. She's also looking for the Seahawk.
Right, the real Seahawk, honey, is going to bring you eggs.
By the way, is that a real species? Species?
The Seahawk, of course it is.
What's the species they use when they release the bird? It's not called a Seahawk.
Oh, no, that's a falcon that they have there.
Is it really?
Yeah, I don't think there's an actual Seahawk. It's a nickname, much like Bambi usually is a nickname.
I don't think that's right.
I think there's an
actual
call.
Species of a Seahawk.
An osprey, actually, is one bird that is referred to sometimes as a Seahawk.
As a Seahawk,
yep.
Yeah. But it's a nickname. Rick in Gig Harbor. Yes, Rick.
Yeah, one of the other elements that I think you guys are missing is, like, with Sunday Night Football is the television commercials. You know, I don't really like to have to explain to my 7-year-old son what a 4-hour erection is.
Do you explain that to your daughter yet?
No, I don't. That's the NBC news that you usually get that stuff on, I think. It's the
it's on the football games, big on the football games. Levitra.
Yeah, maybe. I just don't. Yeah. I guess I don't
know. Just two nose right out. You think she's missing them? She's 8 years old. She's soaking up every commercial message.
Mm-hmm. She might.
She wishes someday she'll be on the Swedish bikini team.
I wish they'd bring those back. They haven't had that for a while.
The girls have kind of left the beer ads, haven't they?
Yeah, you don't see as much.
You don't even see the cross-dressing girls anymore. All right, Rick, good point. Thank you. Yeah, so far, if you had to only pick 7 shows, these are the first two they pick. The third show picked by PTC, the Parents Television Council, as family safe, is Deal or No Deal.
Got to confess, I haven't seen it.
I've seen it a bunch. Again, it's all about greed.
Yeah, it's how much is enough.
Money, greed.
And betting.
Betting, gambling.
Hot women in tight dresses.
Hot women in tight dresses.
Mm-hmm.
Family?
That's another thing I should mention about football is I teach my daughter about betting and stuff. She learned some good stuff.
Well, why don't you say that first?
Sure.
I'm a convert now.
Hey, hey, Mike? Will the Parents Television Council come on to talk about their shows?
Oh, come on. They're an ultra-white, right-wing group of media whores.
Of course,
I'm surprised they haven't called us.
All right.
Well, get them on.
Get them on. I don't understand why Deal or No Deal is on there.
Yeah, I don't think games
and next
we
up
watched
is,
that as a family, Deal or No Deal.
You do?
Yeah, perfectly harmless.
Next up is Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? I haven't seen that.
I have.
Good show?
Good
family
show? Funny show, yeah. I guess
sounds educational.
It's a family show. Jeff Foxworthy is probably the cleanest family-friendly comedian you can find, and he's your host. So he never makes any kind of off-color comments.
I think that's probably
jokes.
A good one. Okay.
Yeah.
And if we could just raise the level of education in America to fifth grade, we'd do so much.
You little dreamer, you. Fifth grade.
The Singing Bee is number 5.
Singing Bee. It's not a bee involved. It's like a spelling bee, but you remember the words to songs. It's a game show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like karaoke.
It's a name that tune, but you have to know any of those lyrics.
Sounds harmless.
It's horrible. The singing is horrible. Horrible.
Okay. Don't Forget the Lyrics is on that list.
Same thing
same,
as the singing
same exact,
bee, right?
Same exact clone of a show.
So two of the exact same kind of reality Dumbo show.
Uh-huh.
I mean, granted, they're not harmful.
Right, that's how thin the herd is.
Well, I disagree, by the way. I totally disagree. But Fox's American Idol is on there. Which teaches what?
If you'll just suck up and sell your soul, you can have some money and celebrity.
What does it teach?
Nothing. Just
well, no, it teaches the same thing as the singing bee. It teaches you to, and football for that matter, teaches you to pick something and root for it and back it. And
but you have a British guy ripping them apart when they sing badly. You got a guy just trashing them, well, destroying their morale.
It also teaches you that life's not always...
And by the way, these shows teach you to herd people into a group and have them root for something. Has that ever been something lacking in our society? Like, we need more of that.
More mob mentality.
More, I mean, you know, the Christians and the Lions taught that.
It's your torch and pitchfork, Timmy. It's American Idol time.
Finally, Super Nanny on ABC.
That show we like.
Yeah. Some of these appear to be harmless. The rest appear to be just crass. So how could... The Discovery Channel, the Disney Channel, public television, the History Channel. How could all of those channels, all of their shows, which are educational, not make the safe to watch with a family list?
Because it's the safe to watch primetime shows with the family list.
Oh.
It's only your top primetime shows that they're measuring.
Well, no, it's your major networks is who they're sucking up to.
Well,
it's your big four. You're right, because, I mean, Meerkat Manor on Animal Planet, that's on primetime stuff. These are good shows about the animals in your world and, you know.
I just want to know who bribed the Parents Television Council to put Deal or No Deal on there, and I'll ask them directly if you can get them on. The shows that they said were bad, you ready for these? And I agree with some of this list, by the way. I saw Family Guy on Fox last night, and... It is a great show.
It's phenomenal. Amazing.
It is a phenomenal show with amazing writing that I should watch down at the Lusty Lady. To pay a quarter for every 10 minutes I get to watch. I mean, it's extremely, I don't want to say slimy, sleazy. But
it's lowbrow.
It's very lowbrow. Yeah. It's not safe for children at all.
Not at all.
And they'll love it, by the way, because of that.
It's a cartoon. It's not just a regular cartoon.
Your child should sneak into the woods with their iPod to watch that show. They should not be allowed to do it in the home. That's Family Guy. American Dad, don't know about.
Same concept. Yeah, cartoon, same network.
House on Fox. Now, I think that has redeeming moral message at the end of every show, and that this cranky doctor guy actually does have a heart. You just have to dig real deep to find it. And that's a message every child should learn about all the cranky people in their lives. So I think House is a good show.
A lot of cast member sex on those shows, though, aren't there? Isn't that one of the curriculum?
Oh, yes. Let's not teach children that we reproduce. That's bad. I know the Parents Television Council is opposed to that. Grey's Anatomy is considered a bad show. Again, probably just because it acknowledges that people have sex.
While on the job.
I think kids should learn, don't hump where you work. That should be taught early to children.
Do people have sex on the job?
In real life?
In real life, yeah.
Yes.
No comment.
Yes, they do.
You've done in this building?
Who said that?
Look, you've worked here for, like, how long?
It'll be 9 years in January.
You've worked here for 9 years, so we're certainly not going to... reveal, you know, anything about it, but it has happened.
I, you know what? Not in a Grey's Anatomy way. How about that?
So wait a minute. She wants. She's like. She's going through our subconsciouses, and she's eliminating the closet.
Right. she's saying not on the closet.
And you know they don't have a broadcast console in Grey's Anatomy.
I know.
With a big space underneath.
oh God.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
I'm going to go back to doing the news now.
You spend a third of every day at a place with a bunch of different people that are all trying
have
to...
Have you ever had sex at work in your whole lifetime?
Me? No, never.
Any workplace?
No, I'm racking my brain. No, I have never had.
You?
You know, yes. Church lawns, I've had some unusual places.
People have sex at work.
Every place I've ever worked.
You've had sex there? Every place, including this one?
Every place I've ever worked.
Melissa's really weird that way. She wants to christen everything.
Girl. She does. It's not really ours until we've soiled it.
Mike Jones.
Now that depends on your definition.
That means yes.
I did not have to.
Hold on. Can you call me back, thanks? Please hold.
Eric Corman.
I prefer the outdoors.
Is that a no, or is that a trying to get by with an opinion?
Yeah.
That is a no.
Never in your life?
Never in my life, no.
You know, I worked at a truck stop for a year and managed to avoid it. I don't know how. Now
a truck stop?
Yeah,
I would hope.
If I had worked at a truck stop, my answer would be yes.
I worked graveyard at a truck stop and never got propositioned. There must be something about me.
You don't have a truck, first off.
Fortunately, you didn't ask me because I work with my wife and we don't have sex at home. We're not going to have sex here either.
All those unsuitable shows in the last group are on after 9 o'clock, which means they're in the outside of the so-called family hour. CSI, Heroes, Grey's Anatomy, House, American Dad, and Family Guy.
Heroes? Heroes is on there?
9 o'clock,
family?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Not so much. It depends on the age of the kid. If you're talking 8, then that's a good list. But if you're talking 8, they should be in bed by 9.
Is it the violence in Heroes that they say it makes it a bad show for families? Because I don't see Heroes. I've never seen it. Miss the boat leaving the dock, afraid to jump on late. I mean, it's about people doing.
To be honest with you, knowing the Parents Television Council for what it is, I think they just can't see that much of a cheerleader in a clingy dress.
And keep it clean in their mind. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's in the mind of the beholder when it comes to the PTC. Yes, yeah. Mike.
For us, it's violence because we watch Heroes, but they, especially with the cheerleader, have some really gruesome stuff
on
there. Oh,
yeah. She clipped off her toe a couple of weeks ago. Did you see that? She was like, I can't believe that I can't die. If you haven't seen it, the cheerleader can't die. She can fall. She can break bones. She can snap her neck and get up and twist it back into shape.
She heals herself.
She's fantastic. And,
she's 18. You can say it.
I got it. No, I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say David Copperfield would have a blast with this woman on a long, wild weekend.
You're right. That's better.
A couple of weeks ago on the episode, and you wouldn't want kids to see this, she was like sitting there going, wow. She was in some class where they were discussing, I think, lizards that can grow back appendages and certain animals that can do that.
Right.
And she wondered if she was that type of a mutation. Because so far she'd only been injured and she heals real quickly. She wondered if she chopped off a hand, whether the hand would reattach itself or whether she would grow a new hand. So she sat there giving herself, did you even see this? She sat there giving herself a pedicure, and she reached down to her, which toe is that?
Pinky toe, they
her
call
pinky
it.
Pinky toe, thank you.
That's
in the Speak English Like an American book, by
the
way.
Right.
And she clipped off her pinky toe, and it went flying across the room.
And how quickly did it grow back?
Grew back in about 8 seconds.
Sweet.
And, you know, back to the football, I don't mind the Viagra ads and I don't mind the bikini team, but I hate it when they show promos for shows like that and CSI and Law and Order.
During football games.
Yeah, that's when the kids are getting the worst stuff because they'll show the most gruesome part is in a 30-second clip to get you to watch later.
Tonight on CSI, complete disembowelment.
Did you ever get that video in the email? I think it's a parody of CSI. This guy with a female cop, and they're a crime scene. Mm-hmm. And they're going, well, he spent the night here, and I'm going to, well, did he have sex with her?
Blue light.
And he's got, with the blue light, have you seen that?
Uh-uh.
He goes, well, I've got this special light that makes
human fluids.
The human fluid glow in the dark.
Uh-huh.
You ever seen this?
No, I haven't.
I'll email it to you.
No.
The lady detective across. Was in the line. She was in the. Let me.
We should bring the
hold
light
on, from,
here in this
from Amy
studio.
Gillette's book. She was in the line of fire.
Why don't we bring the light in this studio and try to examine?
My favorite
this.
Video. Can't share it with you until after 9. Yes, Mike Jones.
We have a guest update. The Parents Television Council standing by to talk to us after the break.
Every year, the Parents Television Council tells you which shows are okay to watch with your kids and which shows are definitely not. We have Melissa Hansen, the Senior Director of Programs for the PTC in Alexandria, Virginia. Hey, Melissa, how you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Okay. We looked at your list. We've commented on it already, and so I'll get to the point. I think your first question I have for you is, when you describe kids, what do you have a specific cutoff age where you consider a person to be a kid and not be a kid? Mine is 24.
Well, I guess we're a little bit more conservative.
Sure.
Than you.
So you're even more conservative than you have the reputation.
Saying something.
Yeah.
or maybe less conservative. Maybe that's what we looked at is based on Nielsen rankings. So Nielsen generally breaks it down to 2 to 11-year-olds and 12 to 17-year-olds.
Got
it.
So
we looked at basically what kids between the ages of 2 and 17 are watching on television.
So 11 and under shouldn't watch your red light shows. And by the way, I kind of agreed with most of that list, although I had a couple of questions.
All right.
I saw an episode of Family Guy last night, and I hadn't seen it in like years. And I'm watching this, I'm going, we allow this on TV? I couldn't believe it. And, it's very funny, and I enjoyed it.
Brilliant.
But I also thought, man, it's sick and twisted, and you should be a certain age before you're allowed to see sick and twisted. Otherwise, what's the point of even growing up? So that I understood. Grey's Anatomy. Grey's Anatomy, about the only scary thing in that is they do admit that people have romance with each other, and sometimes at work. Is that the reason that's on the list, or for what else?
Well, thematically, subject matter, when you take a look at Grey's Anatomy, it's not merely the fact that they all occasionally have sort of gory surgery scenes. All that, I think, is an issue for some families. The fact that they sometimes deal with, in fairly explicit terms, the sexual relationships between the couples on that show. The fact that, you know, in the first season, at least, there were several people that were engaged in extramarital or adulterous relationships.
Infidelity.
And you know what, 11 and under, I got it. And I just, and you know what, it just occurred to me as I even said that I forgot about the chainsaw self-amputating guy who was on last week.
Right.
That's
what?
All right.
Kids wouldn't love that.
Yeah, and Heroes, I assume it's also for violence and really, you know, horrific scenes, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know, Heroes, I think, is sort of in the same category as a show like Family Guy or American Dad in that it is sort of deceptive. You take a look at Family Guy and you assume that because it's an animated program that it must be all right for kids because, after all, kids watch cartoons. Grown-ups don't watch cartoons. And so it's sort of deceptive in the same way. Heroes is a show that's sort of got a comic book aspect to it.
Right.
So you might assume that it's fine for your children, but they do often have fairly intense violence. And beyond that, there have been scenes, for example, where one of the characters was doing an online webcam striptease, so there have also been some pretty over-the-top sexual elements as well. Which
I'm sorry, I missed that. What show is that on again?
She's the blonde one who has a dual identity, and that's how she made her living. This is how she was supporting her kid.
Allie Larder.
Which teaches it teaches you to be resourceful.
So it's that kind of content that causes us to warn parents about that show and say that maybe it's not suitable.
And if you're talking 11 and under, I'm okay with this list. The only I have a problem with your shows that are good for families list.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I do.
Some of them, yeah.
None of them are scripted.
Yep, that's true.
And a lot of them seem to appeal to, some of them are wonderful, The Fifth Grader, The Singing Bee, the Don't Forget the Lyrics, although I wonder if that's truly the best that we have out there, how sad it is.
Yeah.
But Sunday Night Football is primarily appealing to men with commercials about four-hour boners, and I you know, I don't know how that makes the list, just because of the commercials. And Deal or No Deal, it seems to appeal to gambling and greed. Did you guys get paid off to put those on?
No. No. We share your concerns about the ad content, and we are actually sort of starting an initiative to encourage people to complain to NFL, college sports leagues, and so forth about ad content because it is such a major concern. Because, you know, families do want to be able to sit down and watch baseball or football on weekends with their kids, and they feel like they're not able to do that anymore because of the commercials. But I don't want to take away from the fact that the programming itself is inoffensive. And you're right in pointing out that none of the shows on our best list are scripted, and it is sort of an unfortunate reflection on the current state of television.
Well, and by the way, the shows on your Horrible for Kids list, and I know you're not saying they're horrible shows, you're just saying they're unsuitable for kids, mm-hmm. but the shows on your red light list are the biggest money makers. Grey's Anatomy, CSI, these are monstrously huge shows. Family Guy, the biggest, probably that and The Simpsons, the biggest animated shows that are out there. So there's definitely money in slime, and I guess there always will be.
Well, you know, it's interesting, though, that this is the second year we've done this kind of a publication. And what we did was we basically looked at the highest-rated shows among children in that demographic, 2 to 17. And it seems to me that when children are presented with family-friendly viewing options, they will often turn to those viewing options. If we had included cable, for example, in this ranking, all the top 20 spots would have been occupied by Disney Channel programs.
All right, so good.
Kids do like age-appropriate programming, but
why did you not include
not that much available to them?
Why did you not include cable, since 85% or more of Americans get cable?
Well, it's true that cable is almost as commonly available as broadcast television, but in terms of audience numbers, it still really doesn't compete with broadcast.
But you could have helped
rated, a highly rated cable show might attract, you know, a tenth of the audience that a highly rated broadcast show attracts.
Well, you answered my question that you didn't count cable, because there are some phenomenal shows on these nature channels, Discovery Channel, National Geographic Channel. My problem is with the reality shows that you've plugged as family friendly. I don't see these things as anything more than pushing superficiality.
Yeah. Well, from our perspective, there is a real problem in that there really aren't many scripted.
Yeah, nothing. We were scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, and it is sort of true that the best that we can say for a lot of these shows is that they're inoffensive.
And the best also, the best that you can say is that the whole family actually has a chance of being interested enough to sit down and watch them together too, right?
Yeah. You know, and I I don't want to sound unnecessarily harsh, but, you know, if we had done this listing just 5 or 6 years ago, there were programs like Touched by an Angel and Promised Land and Seventh Heaven and programs that really did have very positive, uplifting messages, wholesome content. They were inoffensive programs that the family could sit down and watch together, but there really aren't many shows like that still on television.
I notice there are no freshman shows on the list, no brand new shows. Do you give a show at least a year before you evaluate if it's going to be, you know, dangerous and brainwashing to the kids or not?
Well, yeah, this ranking is really based on what was most popular with children for the 2006-2007 television season.
Okay.
So it would not have taken into account any of the new shows. But we don't wait an entire year to make that assessment. We do have ratings information about the new programs available on our website, which is www.parentstv.org.
Okay, Melissa, how long have you worked at PTC?
Oh, 10 years.
Do you have to, like, if you're going to work for them, do they do a thorough background check on you to make sure there's no, like, pole dancing classes?
You're a nasty nurse on Halloween.
Or anything like that. I mean, are you ultra conservative, would you say, or do you have a wild side, too?
Well, I would say that the reason I came to work for the PTC is because I was concerned about shows that I was noticing kids watching. I remember babysitting, for example, for a second grade girl who told me that she wanted to be a prostitute when she grew up because her parents had allowed her to watch Pretty Woman with them the previous weekend. You know, and
at the end, she gets a sailboat.
That sort of thing that really concerned me.
All right, you kind of dodged my question. I'm just I get all of that, but I'm curious. Like, you do also enjoy adult programming yourself in the privacy of your own.
Well, the PTC has never taken the position that all of television needs to be sanitized so that it's appropriate for a 7-year-old. There are appropriate times and venues. For programs that are more mature in content.
Okay.
And just so you know what's out there, do you watch The Sopranos and Deadwood and stuff like that just to have an inkling of what's going on?
I don't get HBO.
She really is the...
I don't watch those programs.
No. Thank you, Melissa Hansen, for the clarification on some of these. All the best.
Thank you.
Bye. The School of the Rock Battle of the Bands contest continues with a $10,000 prize to the winning school's music department, $5,000 second prize, $500 third prize. Each day, we're talking to someone, a band leader, and a high school band, if we can get them all in the same room and finding out what they're working on. Roger Brakefield is the band director at Enumclaw High School. Hi, Roger. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Fantastic. So, were you in band when you were in high school, Rog?
Oh, yeah. I was heavy metal player. I played the tuba.
You were tuba?
Absolutely.
Is it hard to play the tuba? It looks hard.
Well, you know, there's not that many vowels, but it's pretty heavy, you know. So when you're a little guy, you know, carrying around a tuba is kind of an effort.
Were you assigned the tuba, or is that the one you aspired to play?
Well, actually, I kind of played violin when I started, but you know, I kind of thought, well, when I got into junior high school, that violin wasn't as cool, so I and as macho, so I went to the director and said, "Give me the biggest instrument you got." So he
and you learned it. Wow, amazing! And then did you know you would become a band teacher?
Not that early, no. It was just kind of something fun to do. So.
All right, Roger. Well, now you have how good is your band? Unless are they there right now?
Well, there's a bunch of them here. It's okay. kind of late notice, and we have like a late start, so the kids haven't even started class yet. But we got probably about half of them of our marching band here this morning.
All right, and what do you know? What classic rock song you're learning?
We're working on Oye Como Va.
Oh, ambitious.
Santana.
Ambitious undertaking.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes. We're going to start here, and they said you wanted about a minute's worth of music, so we could have like just a little sliver of Oye Como Va to play for you this morning, whenever you're ready.
Ready now, the Enumclaw High School Band.
Okay, take it away, Chance.
All right, they are tight.
They're working on it. Yeah, absolutely.
They are extremely tight. And the time is dead on.
Yeah, we got a good groove going with our drum line.
All right, we're going to have to check. By the way, unlike the Little League teams, we're going to check to make sure they really go to your school and they really are the proper age, you know.
Uh-oh, we're going to get those birth certificates under control.
Exactly.
Oh, that's for sure.
Because those guys sounded like the New York Philharmonic Orchestra.
Half of them had beards.
Oh, you're too kind. Way too kind.
All right, Roger. Excellent job. Keep working on it. And please be in touch because we're going to get a couple of bands into the recording studio, hopefully in the next few weeks, and start working on our record. Good luck with the competition.
All right, thanks.
If English is your second language, Amy Gillette wants you to make the American language your third. You see, she's an English teacher and the author of Speak English Like an American. Most recently, Speak Business English Like an American. If saying things like a pain in the neck, a piece of cake, burn the midnight oil, if they first make you think of injury, food, and heat, then you may need some lessons from her books. Amy Gillette, welcome to the Bob River Show. Hello.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I'm trying to think of a good phrase.
A walk in the park.
It's a walk in the park talking to you.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled to be with you, and let's talk about the need for this book. It's not just like one of those coffee table joke books, although for my house it would be fun to have for that reason. It's a real book to help people who think they know how to speak English.
That's right. Actually, Speak English Like an American and Speak Business English Like an American are designed to facilitate everyday American English and use the type of expressions and idioms that people use on a daily basis in the workplace and in personal life.
Now, what happens to someone who thinks they are perfectly fluent in English, say they come from South Africa, and they get here and people start talking to them in all these colloquialisms and phrases? I bet it really frosts their pumpkin, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I like your Halloween idiom. Absolutely. A lot of people that come from other countries are used to British English, and they're just not up to speed, so to speak, on the American English that we use today. They don't know expressions like jump the gun and drop the ball and touch base. American English is just loaded with idioms. We love to speak an idiom. We love to use sports analogies.
Is that our fault, or is it their fault for not getting off the dime?
Okay, it's going to be torture.
Hop into it.
I'm with
and
you.
Hop to it.
I'm with you.
And learn the language.
No, it's just a matter of getting here, getting to the United States, and being sensitized to the expressions that we use here. I don't think it's their fault. They're just not surrounded by it in their native country. When they come here, they're surprised by how rich and colorful in idioms our language really is. So
right. Now, if I say my heart goes out to them, do they think that's like a big Edgar Allan Poe reference?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, sometimes. Actually, if you say, I stabbed you in the back, they might check their back and look for blood.
I felt nothing. I felt no pain.
I felt nothing. Yes. All right, and there's lots of things like that in your book. Just a couple of examples of things that people don't know. Learn the ropes.
Learn the ropes, yes.
So you actually, in your book, you teach someone what learn the ropes means.
Yes, we do. We use it in a dialogue. They can hear it on the audio CD. We talk about the origin of some of these expressions, so they really get to learn it, and when they hear it, they'll know exactly what it means. And then when they feel comfortable with it, they can start using it too.
Now, learn the ropes. That was back in sailing times probably, right, when you had to work mm-hmm. the ropes on a ship?
Yep, that's right. That's right.
What about to hold a grudge? A British person wouldn't know what holding a grudge is, would he?
I don't know if they use that in England or not, but it's certainly a very common expression here in the United States. And it's if you hear the word grudge, you may think of something else. So that's certainly something people need to know and to be sensitized to. Something like pull the wool over one's eyes. I mean, if you start translating that literally, you're going to be thinking, what's going on?
You're
going to
be thinking sheep.
Are there some cultures that get it better than others? Like, I know you've taught Hispanics, Eastern Europeans, people from Asian countries. Do some have a harder time with the translation?
I think a lot of Asians have a difficult time just because they're more attuned to translating these expressions word for word, and that, as we know, really lands them in deep water. But the Hispanics seem to get it pretty quickly. The Eastern Europeans, they seem to get it. A lot of these languages are rich in idioms themselves. They just happen to be different idioms.
Is your next book going to be Speak Rap Like an American? Will you teach me how to understand what my son is listening to in his
music? Zizzle, Bob.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. What about understanding President Bush? That would be another one. Fool me once and fool me twice.
Speak American like President Bush. There's another book for you.
Actually, I'm going to continue with the Speak English Like an American series, working on a new follow-up to that right now, because these have been so popular, and I've only barely scratched the surface with the idioms. Each book has about 300 idioms in it, and I've got a list of about 2,000 more I need to fit into books. So,
Amy, tell me a little about you yourself personally. You're very well-spoken. I picture you librarian glasses, business suit, and very very buttoned down. What was your history before you wrote this book, and what made you say, this is the time, it has to be done now?
That's a great question. I actually had taught ESL in Prague in the Czech Republic and also in Connecticut.
What is ESL?
At night school. ESL. English is a second language. Okay. In the Czech Republic and also at night school in Connecticut to Russian students. And I noticed that they were not really understanding these common expressions and idioms, but they were very, very interested in knowing more about them. And that seemed to be a gap in the textbooks. A lot of textbooks just don't have these type of expressions in them. And so that kind of planted the seed in my mind. And then I love to write. My first job was actually an intern at Mad Magazine back in 1989.
That's a surprise.
I was their first intern. Yeah. And so that got me writing and thinking about, writing humor and writing fun, entertaining stuff. And so I put it together, and I said, hey, there's a need for this, and I'm going to work on it. And that's what kind of generated Speak English Like an American. I'm also fortunate to have a stepmother who's from St. Petersburg, Russia, and she was kind of my test market. And she said, oh, this sounds like a lot of fun. So my first version's actually targeted towards Russians, native Russian speakers. We have different editions of the books for different native speakers. First one was Speak English Like an American for native Russian speakers. And I knew I had a hit on my hands because she read it, and she loved it, and she started talking about it to all of her friends.
Amy,
did you enjoy the movie Borat?
I loved Borat. Nah, I think it was hilarious.
Amy, my ancestors came to this country from lands that didn't speak this language, and they had to spend a lot of time learning Americanism. They had to spend their lives hard working, trying to understand the language, and they've built up a sense of pride and accomplishment. And now you're giving the answers to the test to every newcomer
Tom, Dick, and Abdul.
You'd rather have me across the border.
There is a time-earned supremacy we have that you're giving away.
That's right. I'm giving them shortcuts. They'll still have to work hard, but I'm giving them tools to make.
No, that's the point.
Easier.
They won't have to work hard. They won't have to.
Well,
study.
She's
won't
not.
Have to learn
by the way,
mistakes.
She's not giving it away. The book is $39.99 in Canada. $24.95 in the U.S. It's she's getting a good penny for this paperback book. Hey, Amy, do you ever have when you still teach classes to individuals?
Don't do that so much anymore. I'm focused really on writing right now.
On the writing. Well, when you did it, did you have fun? Like, you know, when you have a really tough subject, you have fun day, movie day, field trip day. Did you ever have like a day where you do like, there she was, just a walking down the street, and then they'd all sing, do la diddy diddy dum diddy do. Did you do
Bob,
that?
I did that. So please.
Did you actually do that in your English class? Did you do that?
Not that per se, but I like your idea. I'll have to
All right.
work in some music. I did bring music into the classroom, but not that particular ditty. But we did lots of fun stuff in my classes. Right. We did taste tests. I had them write love letters to each other. So there was never a dull moment in my English classes. Try to really make it exciting for people to keep their attention.
Ooh. The some of those love letters have got to be priceless. How about we sweeten deal? I frost your pumpkin.
Some of the things we see as negative, they probably see as positive. If you say, man, I've got a lot on my plate, they think, man, America,
well,
the land of, you know,
America's
plenty.
Overeating.
Land of plenty.
Yeah.
That's true.
Amy Gillette in
Ann Arbor. Really sensitize yourself.
All right. Amy Gillette in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Thank you very much. Good luck with the book. Speak English
Thanks
like
so much.
An American. Adam Arkin has been very busy the last few years on both sides of the camera. He's the actor you saw in Chicago Hope, Northern Exposure, and Frasier, as well as The West Wing, Boston Legal. Adam also contributed narration to Ken Burns' The War on PBS, and a Daytime Emmy he won for directing the Showtime movie My Louisiana Sky. He's also been recruited to direct episodes of Grey's Anatomy and The Riches. His parents must be very proud. Adam Arkin, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm very well. How are you guys doing?
Good. You are, by the way, you're one of those wonderful actors that whatever you're in, and it's interesting, I don't go, oh, that's Adam Arkin, and he's been, oh, and I remember him from the other thing. Whatever you're in, I feel like you're instantly knowable and sort of like a comforting presence, but I also, you play exactly the character you're playing, and I don't confuse you. You know, like some actors, I said, oh, he's the same person he was in that other show. But
I love Jennifer Aniston, but she is always Rachel in
every exactly. So how do you, I mean, is that a conscious thing, or is it just that you're a good actor and the ones I'm talking about are kind of crappy?
Isn't he sweet?
Oh, I don't think, I mean, no. I to some extent, it's conscious, and I think to some extent, it's just, it's sort of what I was raised thinking that acting was all about. To me, it was always about sort of some kind of immersion into another character. And, I'm happy to hear that you think I go through that much of a transformation. I to some extent, I always see myself, but I guess maybe that's because I'm always sort of using aspects of myself.
Yeah, you would. I suppose that would be, to you, you're always yourself to some extent, right?
Using the what is it, the equalizer in a different way.
Right. Now, Spike is a big fan of Life.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
I think his show's fantastic. It's a phenomenal premise, and I love your cast. They've taken so many great actors who've been working on these HBO series. You know, Robin Weigert, for example, who played Calamity Jane in Deadwood.
Yes.
I don't know if you ever watched Deadwood. It's the filthiest show.
I thought her work on that was fantastic.
Phenomenal, but she was always drunk in a gutter, urine-soaked. This is quite a switch for her, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a chance for her to clean up, which is really nice for her, I think. And she cleans up good. It is a terrific cast all the way around. Damian Lewis is the star of the show, central character, Charlie Cruz, and people know him from Band of Brothers, and he's just a tremendous actor and actually, I'm happy to say a terrific guy. One of the big kind of bonuses of this experience has been getting to know him personally, and he's a very, very good guy to work with, and very much the guy you want at the helm of a show, of a cast like this. You know?
Now you're based on a guy that, you know, got prison going. Do you do any, like, going to prisons to research that kind of thing? Or do you have any personal experience with you know, incarceration?
I have spent the better part of my life in prison. No, I I have spent a little bit of time at actual prisons, just you know, as an observer and doing a little bit of research. And I also read a number of books on white collar crime and some of the Wall Street scandals to just familiarize myself a little bit more with that world. But that's pretty much it. I haven't actually ever been incarcerated yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have in my back pocket if I find that I need to dig deeper into the character in some way.
I've always wondered this about successful actors. Have you ever thought that you nailed an audition only to have it go to somebody else?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I've had that happen. And you know, what I've actually had happen more often is leaving auditions feeling like somehow I blew it and also ended up getting work.
Right, right. The agent called, baby, you were awesome.
Let go,
baby,
go!
The way you puked on his desk, he loved it.
That's good.
I mean, I have been in the room, you know, and felt that not only did I nail it, but, you know, you get tremendous enthusiasm from everybody in the room, and you go like, oh, yeah, this is a slam dunk, and then you find out that it went to somebody else.
And you watch Bruce Willis get moonlighting. Weren't you up for moonlighting?
You know, I went in on moonlighting, and I never realized that I was in that level of contention for it until years later I heard an interview with the creator of the show who said that I was sort of in the final two or three people being considered for
it. I heard it was down to you and Bruce Willis.
We spoke to your dad, I think, a year ago.
Yeah, when Little Miss Sunshine came out.
With the Little Miss Sunshine interview. He was so amazing in that. What's it like to see him in a movie like that and then see it gets such acclaim? And what were his influences on you? Did he have a guiding hand in your acting, or were you more independent?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say in an overt way, although there have been plenty of times when I've turned to him for input and advice. But I think the greater influence has been just, you know, in being the father that he's been and growing up watching his work from the time I was, you know, basically a toddler. And to answer the first question last, it was seeing the success of Little Miss Sunshine was just a huge thrill, and when he got nominated for the Academy Award, I did not realize how incredibly tense and invested I was in it until the night of the awards. And you know, it had been 30 years since his last nomination, and I just really, really wanted it for him. And I had bought into all of the press, you know, that had come out, in which virtually everyone had said that Eddie Murphy was the favorite for it, and I was sort of, you know, prepared for that. And
so was Eddie.
Yeah, he was.
Excuse me?
So was Eddie.
So was Eddie. He was prepared to win, too.
Yeah. And it was just, it was a huge thrill, very emotional. And, you know, watching it, we watched it from home. I had my three-year-old, soon-to-be three-year-old son in my arms, and I'm jumping up and down saying, that's Grandpa.
Awesome. That's nice. A couple quick life questions. One of the quirks of the main character is his constant consumption of fruit. Are there bowls of fruit all over the set, and do you like fruit?
I like fruit. It's mainly Charlie Cruz's character that's eating fruit all the
right.
time.
They don't push it on you too, then.
They're trying to keep that a Charlie Cruz quirk.
Right.
And there does seem to be a preponderance of fruit on the set. So anytime we're in a scene, certainly any scene that takes place in the house, there is an abundance of fruit.
That's a big thing over the usual trays of food. Last question. This week's episode features a mystery pooper. Of all the stories you could rip from the headlines, or was this in the plans before? Because it was in the headlines just a few months ago.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What was in the headlines?
Oh, no.
Somebody was going all around town.
A mystery pooper was in the headlines recently, and it's in this week's episode.
Oh, this was, and that, was that happening in Seattle, actually?
Actually, Spokane, Washington.
Oh, in Spokane. I'm so sorry. And
thank you.
As are we.
So are we that we ended the interview with that question, but it was very nice to meet you. Adam Arkin in Los Angeles.
I feel you put your best foot forward with that one.
Thank you.
No pun intended.
All the best.
Take care, guys.
Courtney Hazlett has some big waiters to fill. She's the New York reporter who now dishes out the scoop at MSNBC.com. Is it Hazlett? I'm sorry, I didn't. Well, I'll get it right. Courtney Hazlett. This morning, Courtney gives her take on Britney, Dirty Sexy Money, and the impending writer's strike. Courtney Hazlett, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. It's nice to meet you.
Hi, how are you guys?
Very good. So, Jeanette Walls left, right?
Yes, I have extremely big shoes to fill. Jeanette really took this column to a new place. Well, I think she was here 8 years, if I'm not mistaken, and so I'm really excited, and I'm honored to be part of the team.
All right, well, let's start with some good gossip. Well, let's talk some trash about Jeanette Walls. What do we never know about her?
Really?
We can't do that.
We can't do that.
Fantastic.
So you do have...
She's busy writing her next book. I was actually just emailing with her the other day.
Did she at least leave you the Polaroids of the stars that helped her get those...
Yeah, the little cheat sheet.
All right. And now, Courtney, what's your background that makes you a good gossip columnist? I just meeting you now, I'm not sure.
I came from OK Magazine, where I was a senior reporter, and before that I was at People Magazine, and prior to that I was at thesmokinggun.com, which is a fantastic website if you guys haven't visited before.
Oh,
they're
yes.
They're the ones who bring you most of your train wreck mugshots of celebrities.
Train wreck mugshots, leaked contracts, it's all great stuff.
Exactly, it's great stuff.
I'm curious, how many people are actually behind Smoke and Gun?
It's a small, small group of people. There's three guys there running the show.
Wow.
Two of them in the grassy knoll, one in the book depository.
That's right.
Exactly.
And now let me ask you just personally, because some people obviously poo-poo gossip, but what is it about it that makes it a desired profession for you? What makes you curious about the lives of the wealthy and famous?
I think the same thing that makes everyone curious, which is we have to do something when we're not working. And everyone kind of points to the people we watch in movies and television and the people who entertain us. So my take is if that many people are paying attention, you know, somebody should be trying to do it right. And hopefully I do it.
Do you offer any kind of scoop bounty if there is a concierge that sees something, you know?
It's concierge.
Scoop bounty. Well, I try to keep those things private.
Scoop bounty. Oh, there is money.
Finder's fee for dirt?
No. I actually get most of my information on my own. You know, I've been doing this for a while now, and just after you've done it for a while, you just meet people, and once they trust you, they tell you things they really shouldn't.
And MSNBC has gossip with integrity. I mean, mostly.
Absolutely, and that's why I joined MSNBC, because it's one of those places where really the bar for entertainment reporting is as high as hard news. And so you're not going to get really trashy pieces here because we just don't play that way.
And you don't make stuff up as some.
Exactly.
Now, who does? Who makes stuff up?
Oh, I can't say that.
Oh, look at you. Well, you're so polite the first day.
OK Magazine, People Magazine,
Smoke
and Gun, they are making up.
All right.
Let's put it that way.
Well, and that's what I want to ask you about. The politics of what you do is such that although it seems racy and daring and scary, you do have to be sure before you say anything, and you have to know that it's going to bother some people, it's going to impress others. What are your... Do you have a code? I mean, yes, there's a code of ethics with regards to journalism, but are there things, even if you knew they were true, that you wouldn't report?
Absolutely. I think it's wrong to... let's put it this way. I have a few taboo subjects that until the people say it, I'm not going to talk about it, and that would be divorce, pregnancy... sexual preference, that sort of thing. I just think there is a point where there is such thing as a private life, and those elements, if you don't play them out in front of the public, it doesn't matter how well I know it to be true or not. I'm
so
not
really
go there.
So if Tom Cruise hit on your husband, you still wouldn't out him?
Well, I think Tom Cruise hitting on people has been reported quite a bit. But, you know, my boyfriend's really attractive, so who would blame
There's no boyfriend, Bob.
Your boyfriend is really... Okay, so there's a...
Yeah, come on.
That's excellent, man. You way to hop from lily pad to lily pad in the swamp. So,
exactly.
So Courtney...
Tom Cruise is a really scary lawyer, too.
Sure.
So.
What do you got now? What's good gossip? I assume Britney would be a topic. She's got...
Britney's a huge topic.
A huge
right
album.
As you know, well, first of all, there's a new album out that's actually getting really good reviews, and I'm hearing she was really a joy to work with in the studio, which is a little bit strange given the court ruling that came down yesterday, where the judge said you can only neglect your kids 2 days a week now.
Good news for the kids, isn't it?
Yeah, instead of every other day.
So, and that was startling that all of her basically, people said, oh, it's a good album, it must have just been the producers and the people that worked on it, and they are coming out and saying, no, she was really actually... That's her career. She still
exactly.
worked hard at that, even when everything else was falling apart.
That said, you know, I've been saying also, Hit Me Baby One More Time was not about the singing. I'm a Slave for You was about a midriff and a snake around her neck during the VMAs. She's never really been known for her vocal performances, and so to say that she has a great album is kind of just saying what we've been saying all along, which is it's well-produced, there's good lyrics, not mostly... are not written by her.
Right.
And,
the songs are not written by her, the lyrics.
Basically yeah. the take-home lesson there.
That's like actually putting a scarecrow in the field and going, this year's scarecrow is very talented.
Exactly.
A great scarecrow.
It's funny, though, because, you know, you talk about people like Lindsay Lohan who don't go to film their movies that they're being paid to do. Well, at least Britney knows to rally and get to the studio.
Okay.
I've heard her recording performances are like in The Princess Bride, where they take a bellows and fill up the lungs of a passed-out Britney and squeeze her abdomen and...
get whatever they can out
exactly.
of her.
Exactly.
So, and you also write... today, I think you write about Dirty Sexy Money, which is one of the only new shows that my wife and I are watching repeatedly, and I love it, and
it's
I'm
fantastic.
Not sure...
And
not
you
sure
know,
what.
It's funny. I was actually having drinks last night with Billy Baldwin, who stars in Dirty Sexy Money, plays the senator, and... He was just saying, this show is so much fun. He wishes, though, that some of the mysteries in the show don't get resolved as quickly as they do, just to drag it out a little bit more. But I said that there's a character who's going to be shot. We're going to find out very quickly who it is.
Shot and killed?
Well, I can't say that. You will have to watch to find out. They'll have my neck if I disclose that. But I will say that he's
going to be killed. Oh, yeah. She's not very good at lying. I can see this
else.
Already. You're going to have to lie better, Courtney.
Else, someone's going to get kidnapped, too. So.
Okay.
I know you don't pay for news, but I bet you pick up the drink tab and I bet you buy doubles when you're out with guys
right?
like Billy
yeah.
Baldwin.
Well, when you're trying to get news out of a Baldwin, isn't the scoop now sponsored by Grey Goose Vodka or something? How do you pick up that tab?
Oh. Guys, that's harsh. No, he's such a lovely guy. He's hilarious. And he's so real. I've always heard this about the Baldwins, all of them actually, that they're just regular guys. And it's true, you know, they love Penn State football and you know, they're just normal guys from Long Island. So it was really lovely.
Do you ever have publicists of these stars call you and say, I would love for you to report on this alleged story and plant
Right, my
things?
Client got really drunk and passed out the other night.
It's usually
just what his
like
career
there's
needs.
There's a bad story out there about their client and they want to, you know, do some damage control and say, oh, he's attending this charity event later tonight. Do you want to cover that? I go, that's not so interesting.
I do have one scoop. Now, I don't know if this is...
David Copperfield slept at your house?
No. Unsubstantiated rumor, but I heard that Jerry Seinfeld, all these bees that are showing up at his premieres are 10-year-old kids. They're violating the child labor laws by having kids too young in these bee suits. But what's worse is they're making those guys sew them by hand before they crawl into them.
Oh, that's tough.
I only heard that third hand. So.
You only heard that, exactly. So it's been a fun couple weeks here in the gossip world.
Sorry, I tried.
I
do want to ask you about the writer strike. I know you're writing about that. Tonight at midnight, isn't like every writer in Hollywood going to quit?
Every writer in Hollywood, if they're covered under the Writers Guild of America, certainly gets to quit for a little while. You're not going to see a big impact right away, though, let's be honest. It's going to have to go on for months and months to really affect the television shows. But the weird part is out on the street, they're saying that this new fall season is so horrific that in some ways they actually want the writer's strike to happen. That way they get to scrap these bad shows.
So it's like
they don't have an excuse to scrap, and you can do it without paying anyone.
So what are the hits this fall? Just tell me what the hits are so I don't bother watching something that's going to go away.
Well, not to shill for the parent company, too, obviously, but 30 Rock's fantastic this year. I think Alec Baldwin had his Emmy performance last week.
Okay.
What else? The Office.
Dirty Sexy Money is a hit?
Dirty Sexy Money is a huge hit.
All right. I didn't even know. I was just watching.
Private Practice is not that bad, actually. I was not happy with it when it debuted last spring when they did that first teaser episode. But I love it now. It's really a good show, too.
A little too girly for me. What else?
Too girly. What else?
Yeah.
Is that it? Is Heroes dropping off, by the way? Because Heroes seems to...
Heroes is having a tough season right now. They kind of introduced too many weird plot twists. It's not as coherent as it used to be. Under a lot of criticism, but I don't think it's too late for Heroes.
Okay.
Also, let's please save Friday Night Lights. It is like watching a movie every week. It's a fantastic show, but it just costs so much money to make, and they don't really have the viewers.
Hey, we watched that one about the guy who travels in time, Journeyman. Is that a dud? Is that going away as soon as the writers strike?
I'm not really thrilled with Journeyman. Okay. That could go somewhere.
My wife thinks the guy's kind of a you know, a Men in Trees type of hunk. She seems to like him.
He's eye candy.
Well, to each their own.
Yeah, exactly.
We like life. Is there any chance that's going to survive?
I think life could survive. And this is, it's just such a crapshoot. But the trick is putting together some programming that doesn't cost millions and millions and millions of dollars per episode to make, because those shows tend to not see any, they don't see their revenue until they're doing DVD sales and that sort of thing. Right. And so it's a big gamble.
By the way, this is maybe not current pop culture, but yesterday there was a story that Star Trek icon, William Shatner, is ticked off that he was passed over for the new Star Trek.
He's really irritated.
He
was passed over. But, I mean, come on, you're like 80 years old.
Thanks a lot.
I heard he asked for
sell this movie to kids, too. You've got to have some sort of appeal. I think it would be nice if they had him in as, you know...
I heard that Jar Jar Binks is going to be the new Starship captain. That's totally bad.
Going to be Shatner the Hutt.
Yeah. Right. Oh. Courtney, thank you very much. Best of luck in your new job. Sorry to stress you out on your first day.
No, I'm happy to be stressed out.